Okay, thanks everyone for being here. I'd like to acknowledge one of my co-authors here in the room, Jackie Cruzado Quiñones. So between the two of us, we'll be able to answer any questions you have at the end. I'm first going to talk a little bit about Latinos and HIV infection. There's not a lot of data on Puerto Ricans, so first I just wanted to mention that Latinos in general have 3 times higher HIV infection compared with whites. 87% of the new infections are among Latino men. They think most of it is driven by gay and bisexual men. 1 in 4 Latinos lack a regular health care provider. And then specific to Puerto Ricans, 23% of Latino HIV cases are among people born in Puerto Rico, yet Puerto Ricans are only 9% of the U.S. Latino population, so they're contributing a large proportion to total infections. And then also it appears that injection drug use is a greater contributor for Puerto Ricans among Hispanics. For the HIV care continuum, it's similar to that of other populations, but it is in all levels of the HIV care continuum, they're doing a little less well than whites. I'll skip some of the Rikers information since we just heard it from Zach. And I do just want to point out that over 70% of the people who are released from jail to Rikers Island and go to the community are going to areas of greatest socioeconomic disparity or need, and also areas of HIV where HIV is prevalent. So if you look at the map on the left, you can see the number of releases to the community overlaid with lower socioeconomic status. And on the right, it's the number of HIV diagnoses overlaid with people who are released to the community. You can see that they're often the same areas. So, I work with Dr. Rosner and Correctional Health Services. With the HIV care continuum, we cover all 5 steps of it. So we do diagnosing. There's opt-in universal HIV testing for people. It's a voluntary when they are intaked into jail. They get a treatment adherence counseling, health education, risk reduction. The transitional care coordination, which is really kind of bridges the jail-based services to the community, that's the group that I work most directly with. And that unit, we start discharge planning or planning a person's release to the community within a couple days, again, because of the rapid turnover of people and their short stay in jail. To give a little background about why we did this study, I just wanted to mention that we've had a couple of HRSA Strategic Programs of National Significance grants. We've actually had 3, but 2 are relevant to this study. So the first one they received with 10 other jail-based sites around the country, and we had over 500 or so participants. When we analyzed the data, we saw that Latinos in the cohort of participants were doing less well than others with regard to the HIV continuum of care and with regard to linkage and retention. And in particular, Latino women were doing less poorly than white women or black women. So with this data, we decided to apply for another HRSA grant, focusing specifically on Latino populations. And we fortunately were awarded the grant. HRSA asked us to specify specific ethnicity with regard to Latino populations, and so we selected Puerto Ricans, again, because they have a high prevalence of HIV and appear to be doing less well in some of the areas. So the methods for this study is that we did 14 interviews of people of Puerto Rican origin who are living with HIV and incarcerated in Rikers Island jails. Also looked at electronic medical record information, and the purpose was to understand the barriers and facilitators that they had for HIV care, for particularly when they're in the community. So some of the themes that we looked at were their experiences around HIV diagnosis, the HIV experience that they'd had in the community, their experience with antiretroviral therapy adherence, and also what sort of support structure they had to help them stay in care, and what were some other barriers. Again, it was 14 people. There were 10 men, 4 women. The average age was 44, and it was a mix of people born in Puerto Rico and in the U.S. The incarceration factors are that there were high rates of recidivism among the 14. At least six of the participants reported being incarcerated over 10 times, mostly in and out of Rikers Island. The average age of arrest for the 14 was 21, but the range was 12 to 40. All participants reported using substances, and 13 had actual diagnoses in their medical records. Nine were diagnosed with cocaine dependence, eight with alcohol dependence, seven with opioid dependence, and other substances were also used pretty widely. With regard to mental health, 10 people were diagnosed with some sort of mental health issue. The greatest diagnoses were depression, with six people had depression, four people were diagnosed with anxiety. But there were also some more serious diagnoses, such as antisocial personality disorder and mood disorders. Nearly half of the people reported a history of homelessness or unstable housing, and all 14 had a physical comorbidity as in their medical electronic medical record. Half of them, seven, had hepatitis C, four had upper respiratory infections, and three had anemia, so some HIV related. Two also had hypertension, and there were other diagnoses in addition, such as liver disorder, diabetes, epilepsy, and actually several others. So among the participants, all of them were diagnosed with HIV over 5 years prior to our interviews, and most of them were diagnosed 10 or more years ago, so they had been living with HIV for some time. Over half were diagnosed in a correctional setting, so I think this just shows the importance of correctional settings in the HIV care continuum, as in particular for diagnosing and treating and getting people started in antiretroviral therapy. Half received some sort of counseling services when they were diagnosed, and they had some common reactions, as you might imagine: denial, avoidance, fear. And as far as initiating their antiretroviral therapy, a third started their medication within a year of diagnosis, but the others, two-thirds, the average diagnosis was over 10 years. So they delayed initiating therapy for quite some time. Several mentioned a fear of medication side effects as a reason, but also substance use, since they were all using substances. You can see one woman, just to give a couple examples, one woman was pregnant, and this was when she was diagnosed, and this motivated her to start antiretroviral therapy. And others, when they became AIDS symptomatic, they also began therapy. The participants pretty much universally said that adhering to their antiretroviral therapy is much easier in jail due to the structured environment and the sober environment. So that was a positive. They cited substance use as the main reason for not adhering in the community. And a couple also mentioned homelessness as a reason why they didn't adhere to medication. The facilitators that they said would the facilitators to adhering to their medication was the convenience of the medical care, if they received helpful medical information that was understandable to them, and also receiving adherence counseling so that they understood the importance of taking their therapy. Most were also they had high health literacy. They all reported receiving their HIV labs upon entrance to jail, and we asked them if they understood what their viral load and CD4 were, and 12 of them could cite their measures and also understood what that meant with regard to their health. Most also reported using information from their appointments in jail or community to help self-monitor themselves and their disease. We delved into stigma because we were wondering how stigma plays a factor as a barrier to healthcare. So most people didn't experience much stigma in healthcare, it seems, but some did feel some stigmatized in healthcare settings regarding their HIV. There were two who mentioned feeling stigmatized due to their incarceration history, but the people I remember talking to said that for the most part they didn't divulge their incarceration history when they were in the community, so that it wasn't an issue. And none of interest said, I find this interesting, none said that being of Puerto Rican origin or Latino affected their health care. Most said that they didn't experience current stigma among close friends or family. This isn't to say that they didn't experienced stigma when they first told them of their diagnosis. But as you'll see here, social support, most people said they at least had one or a few people who they could really count on to confide in about their HIV status and any struggles they may have. For most of them, it was an intimate partner or an immediate family member. And this also served as a facilitator or protective factor for them to want to be healthy and to practice safer sex with their intimate partner. Only one hadn't disclosed his HIV status to the family, and most had attended support groups or counseling at some point. However, most didn't attend these counseling or support related to, at least the support groups related to HIV, it was mostly related to substance use. So questions that we were interested in because of our HRSA-funded grant is we were wondered if it was important for people to receive health care in Spanish. Not surprisingly, since most people spoke English, they said it wasn't that important. But a couple people did say that it was important that the case managers or the people that they talked to most recently, maybe patient care coordinators, do speak Spanish. And one said that he found written materials in English confusing and he wanted that in Spanish. We asked how important it is that they receive health care by a Latino or by a Puerto Rican. And again, most felt that this wasn't at all important. They felt that it was more important that people, that they're treated with respect and that they're given information that's useful and easily to understand. But it was interesting because one person who's preferred a Latino to hear a point perspective from a different culture, and one person said they preferred not somebody who wasn't of Puerto Rican origin because they didn't want their business going back to the community. Most cited health as their number one priority. Their motivations to be healthy included their age. Some people felt like they were getting older and they wanted to start taking care of themselves. Some said experiencing pain. They wanted to feel healthy so that they could reduce the pain or not have any. A couple mentioned that they didn't want to die in jail, and this was a reason to get healthy. Also, family members or close intimate partner was a reason to stay healthy. And a couple mentioned that they had seen other people become ill and die from HIV, and they didn't want that to happen to them. Drug abuse was reported as a primary challenge to health, and their primary needs that they felt that they needed at release would be some substance abuse treatment, mental health care, community-based case management, excuse me, and reinstatement of benefits. And now it's not. Let's see. So the next steps are that we've conducted some additional interviews. We'd like to better investigate transnationalism to see if there's any connection with being from Puerto Rico or having connections in Puerto Rico that may impact or influence their health in some way. And we're also going to explore intimate partner violence, mostly because it's an area that we'd like to learn more about, and also to include some transgender women. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay, so please save your questions to the end, and then you can address them. Our next speaker is Dr. Marge Cohen. She's an internist who's been involved in the care and research related to women with HIV for 30 years. She's the principal investigator of the Women's Interagency HIV Study, and she practices medicine at Boston Healthcare for the Homeless. Please welcome her.